One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast exists because of the paid members at decodingtv.com. Sign up for ad-free episodes and early access to episodes by going to decodingtv.com and becoming a paid member. Thanks to everyone at decodingtv.com who makes this podcast possible.
One temporal aura extractor.
And did you happen to discuss how to use such a thing with my friend?
You need to get to the temporal loom so the extractor can pull Loki directly out of the time stream.
Wait, so I need to get to the temporal loom so the extractor can pull Loki out of the time stream?
But it could be dangerous.
How dangerous?
Oh, not too bad if you're quick about it.
Gotta be quick about it.
But if you spent too long in it, that kind of temporal energy will peel the skin right off you.
I thought you said not too bad, and now you're talking about me getting my skin peeled off of me?
Oh, not too bad compared to what Loki has to do.
Why? What's Loki gotta do?
Violently rip myself from every thread of time and space.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Decoding TV, a podcast about television. I am David Chen.
I'm Patrick Klopik.
On today's episode, we're going to be discussing the season premiere of Loki Season 2. We're kicking off our Loki coverage. We're going to be recapping it and reviewing it every single week right here on Decoding TV. Should be a lot of fun. You can find more episodes of the podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com and find us on social platforms, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, at Decoding TV, where we post clips of our conversations. So, Patrick Klepek, let's talk about Loki season one, right? Like, this is Loki season two, latest Marvel show. You know, when Marvel started having its TV troubles early this year. And when I say TV troubles, I mean there were a lot of shows announced and not all of them came out this year as were planned, right? But the thing I consistently kept hearing was Loki season two is on. It is like that is not moving, right? And so they're like, that is a sure thing. And my sense is that Loki season one did very well and was quite popular. They don't release really that many numbers to this effect, but that was just like my sense from being in the social media ether. And I think there's a lot of great things to recommend Loki season one. We'll start by talking about Loki season one, our overall thoughts on that. We'll talk about a few of the big plot points from Loki season one that transfer to Loki season two. Then we'll talk about our overall thoughts on the pilot and then do a detailed recap. So that's the plan for this podcast episode today. Patrick Klepek, Loki season one, your thoughts?
Oh, I adored the first season. It was that and WandaVision are like this, like, oh wow. Like they're really going to do it. Like they are going to use the advantage of the television medium of episodes, even though the MCU itself is sort of an episodic drama on the scale of a film, but like use like this intimate time, these intimate budgets, this like the camera lingering characters to, they kind of do character studies. I think WandaVision goes off the rail by the end, you know, gets like all punchy and kicky in a way that undercut what I thought was like otherwise a really strong dramatic arc for two characters that were underserved in the films. And Loki, like easily like a fan favorite, like really interesting character across a number of the films, finds themselves in such an interesting place after Endgame for all sorts of reasons, life and death. And all the, you know, TVA shenanigans, the aesthetic, the soundtrack, there are lots of things I liked about Loki season one. But what I loved the most was its examination of a character who is a villain coming to grips with what it means to be a villain and turning them into like a whole person, and exploring that and sitting with it and having conversations about it. Stuff that we don't normally associate with Marvel productions or superhero productions. I'm not going to say it was like a full-on deconstruction of a character, but in terms of what I normally expect out of these kinds of works, I found it to be very thoughtful and interesting and managed to weave a storyline, like a meta storyline that I just have zero interest in as a viewer of like the multiverse. Like, okay, like time travel, whatever, like, I thought they did a pretty decent job of using that as a plot device and a backdrop for what ended up being a character study, and making that alongside a character that we've lived with for 10 plus years across these films and cared about in different forms. I thought like on that respect, I thought Loki season one was like a rousing success and like, unfortunately set like unusually high expectations for how I thought the rest of these experiments would go. Like contrasting Loki season one against a Secret Invasion, in which a similar sort of character study for a longstanding character in this universe could have occurred, didn't occur, didn't even try to occur. And like watching, you know, starting with sitting with season two, as we're starting to watch that, thinking back on season one only makes the highs of Loki season one even better, contrasted to, you know, a show like Secret Invasion, which, but, you know, as you and I have talked about many times, was, I think, an abject failure, a waste of time, and a horrible use of resources by Marvel.
Yeah.
But like, I hope to convey, like, and one of the things I've talked about as we've talked about Secret Invasion or even Loki is that, like, I love this universe. Like, even though I'm mixed in the same way I think a lot of people are who have been on this ride since Iron Man, like, I can still feel those highs, like, when Marvel presents them to me. And, like, I want to still go on these adventures with these characters. And Loki season one was a show that I didn't think was work as well as it did, and was so pleasantly surprised by how invested I was by the end that I couldn't help but be excited for the prospects of a season two, just because, like, great, like, don't graduate it all to a movie. Like, let's sit with these characters and, like, go deeper on that. And, you know, whether season two accomplishes that is something we'll get into. But what did you make of season one?
Well, I feel like we're falling into a very familiar dynamic here where Patrick is very warm and generous and charitable to a lot of the stuff that we talk about. And I am slightly less charitable on it. You know, I'm actually the reverse, Patrick, where many of the technical elements of Loki season one are the things I loved. I thought, like, I love time travel stuff. I'm a big fan of, like, time loops and time paradoxes and all that stuff. Like, I just love those kinds of movies. Triangle, Time Crimes. Like, these are some of my favorite movies. So I just love this stuff. I can't get enough of it. And the stuff about Loki season one that I truly enjoyed were the technical aspects, the production design of the TVA, and, you know, the fact that it looks like it's straight out of Terry Gilliam's Brazil. Like, the Time Variance Authority looks like it's kind of this bureaucratic nightmare, and you know, I love that stuff, and how the TVA occupies the space where, like, the Infinity Stones don't even work anymore because they're so, you know, that's how powerful the TVA is. Like, they're beyond even what the Infinity Stones can do. And the score was incredible. You get to see Tom Hiddleston and Owen Wilson act together in something, which is something that you don't get a chance to see very often.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of the trappings of Loki, I thought, were really quite excellent. And I think there's a reason that I think, like, the look of the show does capture people's imaginations, because it's so unique and distinct in how the Time Variance Authority appears and the design of the little portals they go through and all the worlds they travel to. Like, all that stuff is great. So a lot of stuff to recommend it. Bob Iger has since said, you know, the shows came out, like, we put people in charge of making TV who didn't know what the fuck they were doing. Basically, I'm paraphrasing, right? But, like, it really does feel like with WandaVision, with Loki, that they're still figuring out what the role of television in the MCU is. And there were some growing pains there, in my opinion. And so the stuff that you said you really liked, like, I was not a fan of. They basically had to redo Loki as a character in season one. He basically does a speed run of his arc in the MCU, right? Because
mm-hmm.
the character in Loki that we see in the TV series is the character that vanished from
Endgame,
Avengers. And is it Endgame, right? Endgame,
yeah, right? Like, yeah. It's like when they were revisiting the you know, the attack in New York.
Actually, no, the Avengers. No, not Endgame. Avengers 1, right? Remember, he gets taken, like, Avengers 1, like, Hulk slams him down on the floor, and then he gets taken down in the elevator, and then he grabs the Tesseract and vanishes. That's the Loki that we are going through this Loki TV show adventure with. It's not the Loki from Avengers Endgame that, like, sacrificed himself for Thor and all that. You know, like, it's a different version of the character. So what they had to do in Loki, like, season 1, was play a movie of the other Loki and say like, hey, this was you in another life. And like, you actually ended up becoming a good person. And so they had to like fast forward through all the character development that Loki would have gone on in order to get him to the point where we might actually root for this character. Because again, the character in Loki season one was the guy who had just finished executing the battle on New York. Right. And so I think there was potential for them to explore like, oh, what is it like for like an evil guy to become a good guy? But they didn't do that. They just fast forwarded past all that and basically had him become a good guy virtually right away so that he could have this interesting dynamic with Sylvie that I do think is they have great chemistry and that's genuinely good. But that occupies most of the first season. And it's less about exploring like what's it like to be evil and become good. It's more about like, okay, Loki's a good guy now. And like, how is he going to struggle to like finish this adventure and get to the bottom of this? And what's his relationship with Sylvie like? Which is not a terrible arc for that character, but it's not as interesting as what I think your experience of it was. Mm. And then the other big beef I have with Loki season one is at the end of the day, it does feel like a massive trailer for MCU phase five, you know, which is, oh, okay. So they get to the bottom of who's behind the TVA. They get to the timekeepers and then it's, oh, the timekeepers aren't actually the people in charge of the TVA. It's actually He Who Remains, and they kill He Who Remains at the end of season one of Loki. And it's like, and He Who Remains delivers a like 20-minute long monologue, basically explaining who he is and what the premise of the multiverse is, that really does feel like it's set up for future seasons of Loki and or future movies from the MCU. And I, at the end of the day, I couldn't escape that I was watching a extended trailer for the MCU as opposed to something that felt like it had a fully satisfying arc on its own.
Yeah, I guess we disagree on, yeah. I look, anything in the MCU is to some degree teasing the next thing in the MCU. It is a chapter in a book. It is, they are lifting that directly from how comics structured themselves, like for good and much more increasingly for worse. But I guess for me, I really bought into the Loki and Sylvie thing. It completely worked for me.
Yeah.
And so when I get to the end of season one and they've fallen for each other and they have that moment at the end of time with He Who Remains, that to me was a complete arc for these characters, and that when he gets kicked through a time portal and the time streams unraveling, yada yada, like, to me, yes, I saw where this was setting up a lot of like the upcoming phases of the MCU, but to me that was backdrop to what I found to be an extremely compelling dynamic between these two characters. Your mileage then varies on the percentage of how that works based on how well those characters worked for you. And it sounded like it worked better for me than it did for you. But when I got to the end, like, part of this, cause I just don't really care about the multiverse. So it was just like, seems like a boring right. way to go with the storytelling here.
Right.
But I found,
truth. We just finished talking about Ahsoka and how like the emotional truth of that show didn't ring true for us. But I think you're right. Like when Sylvie basically betrays Loki at the end of season one, That did work. That's an impactful moment.
It hits, right?
And that did work. So that's completely fair, Patrick. And I'll rein it back. I agree. I didn't love the execution of the Loki Sylvie arc. I think it's rushed. Is the worst thing I could say about it. But I do think you're right. It is an arc, and so I do want to give credit to where credit's due. Now, having said all of my complaints about Loki season one, I think these are like really talented people working on the show. Like I think talent is emanating off of the show. And I feel like these are people who like they probably learned some lessons from season one of Loki. Is this the first time we've seen a Marvel season two of something?
It is. I think the only other show that's gotten a season two is the like anthology series, What If, which is what more if? Like that's short, right. short stories that yeah, are yeah, yeah, yeah. Computer animated. But in terms of, you know, lots of other shows made sense for a season two, but a lot of them have just like not gotten yeah. like a show like She-Hulk definitely should have gotten a season two. Like you
right,
made a,
right, right.
A you know, a con- anyway, but yes, I believe you are broadly right that in terms of like a live action thing.
Yeah.
It's a season two, but it's still what, 3 years in between seasons? Like
I think 2 years in between.
Two years.
But my point is that, as we all know, you learn a lot of things when you're doing a thing. When you're doing the thing, you learn a lot about, like, you might not know, like, where is the story taking you until you start doing the story. You know, it's a very common phenomenon where like a showrunner or a writer will like write a character and then they cast Jeremy Strong as Kendall Roy. Right. And then it's like, oh, my God, like my mind is going to all new places about where this character could be and the potential of the story that we could tell. And I'm sure there's many moments like that happened during Loki season one where they learned a ton. They're super talented people making the show. And they're like, okay, now that we have a bunch of lessons learned, let's take all that into Loki season two. And by the way, let's add some Academy Award winning actors to the mix as well. I'm like, okay, I am psyched for Loki season two. I feel like, again, the only show to get a season two live action so far. It's like, hey, this is making TV shows is a job where you learn on the job. And so like maybe these people have learned more about how to structure and plan out the story that they're telling here. And so I am really excited about Loki season two. And so I have to say, minor spoiler, so far what I've seen makes me feel like my excitement is well placed. So I will say one last issue about Loki season one that I do feel will be relevant in our conversation about Loki season two, which is that Loki season one did feel like it really wanted to pull some twists like every episode. It felt like Westworld season two in many ways, where it's like, the real thing behind the thing is this, but not really. Mm-hmm. You know, like it felt like it just kept wanting to one up itself. And I hope like that, I find that to be a very tiresome format of storytelling, because the problem with that form of storytelling is you don't know what you're watching. Like, okay, should I take at face value what you're telling me, or should I assume that this is going to be revealed to be a facade? And then it's like, well, what are we doing here? So I think Loki season one did also suffer from that as well. So for all the reasons I've enumerated, like Loki season one wasn't fully successful for me, but there's a lot, it has a lot going for it. And I would still ultimately recommend it for anyone. Like it's one of the best Marvel's TV shows that has been made.
Yeah, so, absolutely. I agree.
It and WandaVision are the best ones. And so it's like, if you're interested in this world, it's still something I would feel comfortable recommending. But I had a lot of problems with Loki season one that I hope will be resolved in Loki season two. So anyway, those are some overall thoughts on Loki season one. And before we move on to Loki season two, also want to mention where the status quo is. Patrick Klepek, I don't know about you, but I felt like the show didn't really do a great job of like getting us up to speed on what's going on with season two.
Deeply uninterested. even for people like you and I who like watch the show, think about this, like in theory are keeping it more top of mind than the average person because they got busy lives, don't have to like the way this show starts, it's like, whoa, whoa, like we're already running. Like just like what?
Loki season two basically begins seconds after or minutes after Loki season one ends. There's a previously on that, in my opinion, does a very poor job of getting you up to speed. And I, by the way, I think the previously on being so bad is a testament to how, in my opinion, unnecessarily complicated Loki season one was. Like there's just so many twists and contrivances that I just like it didn't need all that to land the emotional core of what you just described, Patrick, of like Sylvie and Loki getting together.
Well, they don't even try to convey that in the previously on, really.
Exactly. It's just like, here's a bunch of plot like that barely makes any sense unless you've read up on it. Right.
So, and it's like, at the end of the day, all that really matters is like different timelines, variants. Like they've been killing off these things. Like the core of that show was like, but I think part of the issue is like this previously on, what are you going to do a bunch of times setting up Loki and Sylvie? Like, they're not in this episode, like, you know, like Sylvie not present for much of this episode.
Maybe it'll be in the next previously on, right? We'll see.
Yes.
So, okay. So here are some facts about season one that we should know about, right? Season one introduces us to the Time Variance Authority, an organization that tried to maintain order in the space-time continuum and was charged with pruning anomalies. The organization was run by the Timekeepers, who are like these three wise people who we eventually learn are fake, and they're actually being puppeteered by He Who Remains, who's basically Kang the Conqueror, character we meet in Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. So we also learn that there are other versions of ourselves called variants living in alternate timelines. And we're introduced a character called Sylvie, a variant of Loki, who got ripped out of her life by the Time Variance Authority, the TVA, and then as a result, like, has her whole life taken away from her and develops a vendetta against the TVA. She wants to destroy the TVA. We also learn that the people who work at the TVA were themselves variants and kidnapped and brainwashed to work in the TVA. They had lives before, and that's one of the big revelations of Loki season one. Again, there's just tons of like reveals, right? There's like, aha, this and aha. It's like, it's a lot of stuff. So anyway, we're introduced to He Who Remains, a.k.a. Kang, who used to be a scientist from future Earth that discovered the multiverse and who traveled around and realized that alternates of himself wanted to start multiverse trouble. And he was able to end all that trouble by creating the TVA and policing the timeline and avoiding a multiversal war. But turns out Kang is getting tired of doing his job. He's like, I don't want to fight anymore. So he's like, Loki and Sylvie, I've laid out this elaborate sequence of events so that you would arrive here and either and kill me and take over my job, right? Or you can kill me or take over my job. You know, like one or the other. Either way, I don't need to worry about it anymore, right? Like, and then Sylvie is so racked with grief and revenge that she decides to murder Kang and push Loki into a time portal, which sends him back to the TVA, only at a different point in time, one in which Kang's face is all over the place, similar to the ending of Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes. The only other thing to mention is that Gugu Mbatha-Raw plays a character called Ravonna Renslayer, who works at the TVA and at the end of season one decided to go off in search of free will. And so that's another thing that's going to be resolved. I think that's most of the stuff from season one that we need to care about for season two, right, Patrick?
Yeah, I think that's right.
But all that stuff I just said, it would have really helped me out if I knew all that before I watched season two. So that's why I repeated that all here today, because maybe people are listening to this not having rewatched season one, and you know that will help get you up to speed. So anyway, those are a bunch of facts and details and thoughts from season one of Loki.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
All right, let's get to season two of Loki, Patrick Klepek. What did you think overall of the first episode?
I quite like it. There's like a incredibly strong sequence that, yes, you know, takes place in the basement of the TVA that is just
amazing,
masterfully structured, yes, edited, just a bit of incredible comedic and dramatic. It's one of my favorite things I have probably seen this year, and just tickled. I don't have a great sense of where this season is going. I have my worries about, can this show maintain its own identity without being sucked in to the larger Marvel universe and set, like, I didn't view the first season too much of a explicit trailer for what's to come. I thought there was enough core identity at the show that it accomplished its reason to exist as a show while also accomplishing these other things, which is really the structure that most Marvel projects have. Like, even the best of them, like a Black Panther, are still accomplishing those other tasks. And then it's just, how best can you do it within that structure? Here, I think there are a lot of elements in place for interesting storytelling, but, and this is all like, and we'll get into this about the whole Jonathan Majors of it and like his presence here and like what the implications are and how that makes you feel watching it. But, you know, Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania was so weighed down by like that weight of like, hey, the next 5 years of movies and television shows are going to be influenced by this guy, this thing. Got to make sure that people understand that. And while that was present in the finale of Loki season one, and was implied by the consequences of the events of season one, there was still like a strong through line of like, what are these characters motivated by? Why are they doing the things that they're doing in season one? And so I'm worried, even though I don't think it's present in the first episode, that that weight is going to buckle harder on a season two. We're that much closer to a Secret Wars. We're that much closer to this other stuff where this character has to be more important if they stick on the track that that Marvel has been on for these next few phases. But all those like future concerns aside, you and I have only watched the first episode. I know some critics have seen more of it. It's a really fucking entertaining hour of television. It is snappy. It's beautiful to look at. I love how talky it is. Like, and it's not that Joss Whedon-y sort of like tired, exhausted form of comedy that like defined Marvel for so long. They find their own forms of comedy that aren't just poking fun at the world. Like, it happens in the editing. It happens in like setups and payoffs. It's just Owen Wilson is fantastic in it. Like, does so much comedic work in this episode. Has so many great physical moments that I was laughing at. I just found myself enthralled from start to finish, but just without a good sense of what does it all mean? Where are we going? What's the dramatic weight for the next five episodes? I don't know. But if I was just looking to be at this moment, happy to be back in the world of Loki, I think the first episode knocks that part out of the park.
I pretty much agree with you, Patrick. I had a great time with this episode as well. I think Ki-Hui Kwan fits right into this world. My
God. Like, I mean, like, just like a glove.
Yes, it's amazing. It's amazing. And I think the show continues to look incredible. Like, it just has this, the design of the world is just so captivating, and it just demands your attention because it's like, wow, every few seconds you're seeing something that's like, wow, so much thought was put into conveying an idea with that specific visual. Specifically just around like how the TVA is designed, right? Like, the TVA has a really interesting, unique design that's like a combination. It's like retro futurism, basically. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, it looks like it's like mid 20th century, but also from the future, with like hallways that go on forever, and with like a lot of curves, basically, like a lot of curved arches and surfaces and so on and so forth. It is a very entertaining show episode, and continues to be an entertaining show. And I share your questions and concerns about where it's going. And I particularly hope, again, one of my big complaints of season one is like, there's just too much stuff going, too much plot, too much stuff going on. You don't need that much stuff to really be an interesting show. To like, the emotional core is what people care about. And I do worry that season two will get bogged down in that as well. Like, there's multiple scenes I had to like rewind and like re-listen to what was said just to follow what was actually happening in this episode. I don't know if you had a similar experience, but I was like, wait, so he needs to go to what to do where to well, where sh- to do I, what? And like,
I mean, the show, know, I think is, I think we'll get into this as we go with like specific breakdowns of the arc of the episode. But like, I mean, look, pilots are hard, and like, this is functionally like a pilot again coming a couple of years later. Like, you're doing all this heavy work and all these terms that is like so much gobbledygook. And it seems like the show is aware, like, okay. We're throwing a lot at you. We're going to say it a couple different times.
No. I don't agree with your formula. Like, they don't do jack shit to explain the TVA. They're introducing completely brand new stuff that they didn't need to introduce, quote unquote need to. I mean, obviously they will need to for the plot, but I'm just saying, like, they're not like reusing a bunch of shit from the first season, right?
No,
they're
no,
like,
I know. I agree. I just mean, in terms of the structure of new element introduced, show seeming to be aware, we should probably explain this a couple of times, and finding a way to do that in a way that is like funny and interesting. Like, they can sort of see a flaw, like whether you call it a flaw or not, but like, ugh, like, okay, how do we explain this very comic booky concept?
Right,
And finding interesting and fun ways to like repeat that knowledge to the audience, which, look, you could go, hey, maybe don't get that. Like, there are other ways of doing this, but I think if you're embracing the comic bookness of it all, which I think different elements of this episode does, they do some pretty clever things to work around that and also embrace it at the same time, which I think is kind of interesting.
I think that's completely fair. And I think you're right that like, but I think if you do that too many times, it does get exhausting, is what I'm
sure.
saying.
Sure. Right? Yeah, and you so, can't do you yeah. can't do the trick that they use here six yeah, more times. Exactly, it works really exactly. well here.
Yeah.
And if
yeah.
like that specific sort of setup and structure happens five more times, it's gonna feel worse, you know, every right. single time they roll it out.
Let's talk about what actually happens in the episode. The second season of Loki opens with an alternate version of the TVA where a huge statue of Kang looms large. Let's pause here for a second, Patrick. So I think what we are, I'm not 100% sure about this, but I think what we're meant to understand is that, and I did try to like look into this. I like watched a few videos. I read a few articles, but like, it was still difficult for me to decipher. And I think what we're meant to understand is, like, my interpretation is that over the years, there have been many different iterations of the TVA.
Mm-hmm.
Just like how in The Matrix Reloaded, there was like many different versions of The Matrix over time. They like kept reinventing it. It's cyclical, right. And so Loki was sent to a point in time where the TVA had Kang the Conqueror. Jonathan Majors' character, like he was the guy who was like the one who created the TVA and ran it explicitly. And that's why like later on when he like puts the rod into the wall, you know, Kang's face is still under there. So we're in an older version of the TVA, not like an alternate universe version, but just like previous point in time. Does that make sense? What do you think?
That doesn't make sense. And I think your interpretation is supported by the like on-screen text of the show, like
yeah.
not to jump too far ahead, but there's a post-credit scene in which like it says where we are, like we're yeah. in blah, 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 but then also says branched timeline. Right. Right.
And so it didn't say that at the beginning.
It didn't
of the
say
episode,
that. So I'm
right?
to assume that yeah. we are in the sacred prime timeline, however right. you want to call it, but yeah. in a previous version where Kang was like, I'm just going to be out here.
Yeah, and at some I'm point, out.
And then I assume like multiverse war heck comes in like, oh shit, time to start over
right.
again. Wipes everyone's brains.
I got to go into like, hiding. I got to go into hiding and not be so upfront, you know?
Yeah, no, time to do another draft of the TVA.
I can't put my face on Maine anymore. I need to.
Yeah, he's got to go to a private account.
Yeah, I got to go to a Finsta after this. So, all right. So Loki's on the run because nobody, including his old pal Morbius, recognizes him. He leaps off a nearby ledge into a flying taxi before crashing into a different part of the TVA and running into another friend who doesn't recognize him, Casey. So he's really confused and he begins to scream as he's ripped through time to the present where Casey does recognize him. Let's pause for a moment. I just thought this is a pretty cool sequence, like just cool overall. And the time ripping effect is cool. Everything just looks cool. It's clearly inspired by like, I'm going to say scenes from Star Wars, Attack of the Clones mm-hmm. or Revenge of the Sith, like the car scene, right? Fifth Element, you know, felt like it reminded me of the Fifth Element scene where he's like in this car that's like going through this futuristic city. The show is back and it's like, oh, this looks really freaking cool. Anyway. Let me know if you have any thoughts. Otherwise, I'm going to keep
going. Well, I'd say like one of the I think the strengths of Loki's production design means that it helps straddle an issue. The superhero films, Marvel stuff in particular, anything shot in the volume have where it's just like you can the physical stuff helps ground you. And then you can still have the fun of the like, I know that background, like they didn't build it. Like, I know that's a visual, like I can see that. I know it's an effect. But because the production design and the physical elements of the world are so well realized, like it just does a really great job of letting the fantastical stuff that I know in my head is fake if I think about it for too long, just be the fun spectacle, like mm-hmm. filling in gaps that would look like wouldn't look as interesting if they were trying to do it through some old school production means. And so and that's part of like the real strength of the show is because that. Where the characters are, like they're often in a place and then aided by the things around it. And those things just work in concert so well, because I think that production design is so strong and so visually striking.
Yeah.
And so to be right back in that, I think is like speaks to what you were talking about, like where the aesthetics of the TVA, like allow them to just like strike that balance between like how they display the fantastical while also grounding these characters. Like it's one of my favorite elements of the show that when you see it done right, it's like, gosh, I wish like more productions could find a way to do this as well.
Yeah, yeah. Elsewhere, Mobius and B-15 mull over their discovery that the entire mission of pruning variants has been ruining lives for as long as the TVA has existed. Casey reveals that he'd briefly seen Loki before they're interrupted and asked to appear before a new judges council to explain what's going on. As B-15 and Mobius depart, Loki reappears to try and catch up with Loki, to try and catch up with Mobius. At the judges council, a decapitated head of a timekeeper sits on the table while Mobius and B-15 are grilled for their decision to stop pruning branches and maintaining the sacred timeline. The two explain that they're all actually variants and Kang had purged memories of their past lives. B-15 proposes the new mission of the TVA is to protect the new branches that are spreading, at which point Loki reappears and uses a pruning baton to destroy a wall, revealing Kang's face. Let's pause here for a moment, Patrick, and talk about some of the stuff going on here, right? So, and I think it's worth talking about the Jonathan Majors of it all as well.
Yeah.
But the idea that the TVA has been doing, war crimes, is going to be interesting to see how, that plays out. But they do need to introduce, this show needs bureaucracy to, function as a show. And so it's the timekeepers are no longer existence and that version of Kang's dead. So we need to just introduce this whole other construct of these judges, because you can't have this show function without some kind of authority figure with which you have some friction, right? So I'm not mad about it. They introduce these new characters who are this judge's council, and they need to kind of argue with them about what the fate of the TVA is going to be. I guess any thoughts on that construct, and then we can talk about the Kang stuff.
Yeah, I think that's part of the fun of the show, right? The annoying friction of bureaucracy and right. red tape. And there's that moment in the judges council where you're supposed to identify yourself, wait your turn for the light to be on before you speak. Those are just especially contrasted against what we consider to be friction in these types of stories. And even though Loki is more of a trickster and is not as powerful as a Thor or something like that, you still think of them on that sort of scale as characters. And it's fun to watch them be put into an office setting, basically. That's inherently funny and interesting. And so the goal of the show has to be, we have to make those frictions interesting then. Merely introducing them is not enough. It has to make sense within the world, and it does make sense in this world that you would take out one block and they would just put another one in, because again, these people have been doing this for all time, for as far as we know, an infinite amount of time, a way of time that we cannot even conceive. And the idea of then breaking those rules, if anything, little goofy that they convinced the council so quickly. Or these elements of the council, they're like, I think we should stop doing what we've been doing forever. Because they haven't exactly, yes, the timekeepers are robots and are fake. So that would be a bit of a, yes. That seems bad. But they haven't, Mobius and Loki don't talk about the conversation with He Who Remains until after this, it's not as though, you kind of get to this moment in the story and you as the audience member know a lot more than many of the characters do. And if they knew everything that Loki does, then they might be a little more interested in I feel like some of that is a little yada yada to shift the priorities of the TVA. I don't think it's story breaking by any means, but I do like this new bureaucratic function of the TVA. And as we'll get to with, Obi, the joy of this show frequently is going in an elevator and going to a new place. What did they come up with? And so that's agreed. Part of what I like about this show is what did something in the writer's room where they were it'd be really funny if we did this, and then
it'd be really funny is if one of the guys was just sleeping the whole time, and that,
that was
very amusing. That's amusing. Yeah. I do want to call out Rafael Casal. Is an actor who you might have seen him in Blindspotting if you've seen that movie. Mm-hmm. But he plays kind of one of the new TVA guards that I think is going to be a character this season. So he plays the guy that escorts them to the judges. And yeah, I think he's probably going to be a major character.
Bad vibes from that guy.
But yeah, very, very compelling actor. And I'm looking forward to seeing what he has to do this season. So Jonathan Majors, Patrick. Jonathan Majors has been accused of some not great stuff, and also his reputation has really taken a bruising online in the last year, basically. And there was rampant speculation that he was going to be dropped by Marvel. And a lot of questions about why Marvel didn't say anything about his role in the MCU, and still hasn't as of right now. As far as we know, Jonathan Majors is still going to be like a major character, excuse the pun, a significant character in the MCU, which is a bit of a shame, a bit of a distraction, because first of all, you're introducing him as a character who literally has like tons of different versions. So like by definition, you could easily cast someone else and like have that make sense. But I do think that it does feel like they shot a bunch of stuff. Like he is deeply integrated into the DNA of the show.
I don't think, yeah, right? I think that in front of Marvel was reshoot the show.
Yeah.
Or live with this. I, you know, we'll see what happens. My expectation is part of the reason Marvel hasn't said anything is that the end of this show might answer it for us. And that
really, I think it's more like they're waiting for this whole thing to blow over, or you're right. Maybe they're like, let's just get Loki out the door and then we can cut ties with Jonathan Majors. Like that's possible too. Like they might just be like, let's get Loki on the door, then we'll recast. Because yeah, he is, it would have been, based on what I understand and what I've seen, it would have been very difficult to replace him for the show without redoing it. And they probably spent over $100 million on this show, is my guess.
Yeah, right? I guess I just mean, I it would not surprise me if in a post-credits scene of, you know, episode six of the show, we are sort of given an answer on like what Marvel intends to do with this character. I would be shocked, even if Majors is, the legal system is complicated. You know, look at what happened with, who's the Rick and Morty writer? The
Justin Roiland.
Justin Roiland, right? Like, you may not be held to account in the legal system, and still what you have done is worthy of being stripped of your like public status. And my guess is that is where Jonathan Majors ends up, in which we cannot possibly know what happens in the legal system. It's easily manipulated. He has a lot of money. Like, it's complicated. Someone can seem as though they should be punished, and they may not work out that way. That said, I think we have a lot of outside evidence of their character, of their behavior, that is beyond these specific incidents that like first led to all of this discussion and angst over where does he fit in, like as an actor that has been like frequently done incredible performances, right? Like that it always makes this tension so much worse when like someone is revealed to appear to be a monster when you broadly like delight at seeing them appear on screen. I think Jonathan Majors has been like largely seen as someone who's like, wow, they are going to be one of the faces of movies for the next 20 years. Like that's the kind of charisma they have on screen. But I think we know enough about Majors at this point that unless I guess I would just say, even if we learn nothing in Loki season two, if they decide to remain silent, I will be genuinely shocked if they stuck with the actor going forward. I think it just got really messy for them to explain, to want to talk about it when the show is hanging over them, right? Like,
right,
just
right.
Get the show out, and then we will quietly realize eventually in the Hollywood Reporter that like here are the actors that Marvel is looking at to put as this character going forward.
Yeah, but it's a little bit awkward when it's like, look, we know he's extremely problematic, but also we spent $140 million filming season two, and we can't just undo that. So we're not going to say anything. That doesn't benefit anyone for them to say that. But I guess it's worth bringing up just to say, if people had any questions about why Disney hasn't announced something, it's highly plausible that one of the reasons is that he is so deeply integrated into season two of Loki.
Yeah.
And maybe afterwards they're going to be like, okay, that's done. Now let the recasting process begin. We will see. We will see. But it does seem like the most likely path right now. So anyway. Or maybe they're just hoping it's all going to blow over. You know, that's also possible. So
yeah. And I think it will be something we will like personally talk about more as we watch this show further. Yeah. Like you kind of get to sidestep it a bit here because Jonathan Majors isn't like a principal character in this episode. But again, I think you're right. The reason they have completely gone silent on this is because I think we're going to get into like episodes 3, 4, 5, whatever. And it's going to be like, oh, right. he's been in the, like, the, he is just here.
He's, you know, like, in major scenes, you know. And
why
it's
did,
like,
Warner Brothers not, like, recast, like, The Flash? Oh, shit. Like, the main actor is two principal characters in the film. We just got to eat this L and move on.
Yeah, and, like, a lot of Loki looks like it was shot on, like, you know, there's a lot of CG that's really brilliant, but a lot of it does look like they actually built sets or parts of sets. And it's like, you can't just go on the volume and redo that with someone else. Like, it's not possible.
Yeah.
Or it's not practical to do that. So we will see how it plays out. But wanted to acknowledge the Jonathan Majors of it all, because I think it is going to be a topic people are thinking about. All right. As some members of the Judges Council decide their next move is hunting down Sylvie, Loki explains to Mobius about the meeting with He Who Remains, the consequences of killing him, how war is coming. Mobius continues to struggle with having no recollection of past events. Before witnessing Loki moving through time, Mobius believes he knows someone who can help. Let me pause here. This dialogue scene between the two of them was, like, so delightful. Like, with... you know, Mobius being like, oh yeah, it doesn't look like it's that painful, and he's like, oh, it's actually agonizing. He's like, yeah, it really does look painful. I was just saying that to be nice earlier, like, you know, the time skipping looks like it's, like, really painful for Loki to experience.
I mean, it's the closest that the MCU plays with this a little bit in Multiverse of Madness, but, you know, not a particularly gory franchise, but, and here I like, it's the closest they get to body horror in Marvel. Like, it's fast and it's more implied than explicit, but it's definitely within that ballpark. Like, what's happening to the physical elements of Loki during that transition are upsetting to look at, and I think there's a reason that it goes that I can almost imagine in the, you know, like, doing, you know, getting different visual effects tests. They're like, well, how fast should it be? It's like, well, let's do it at 30% speed. It's like, whoa, no, that's fucked up. Like, you gotta crank that thing up so that the younger audiences, like, still wanna watch this show. And it leads up to, you know, we even got, you know, there's the brilliantly edited sequence later.
Yeah.
But like, as far as a, like, one-off joke, like, in the elevator, when the camera pans over as he time slips and there's the other employee of the TVA that's just in there. It's like, well, what did you think about it? And it's like, I was howling.
It was, it was amazing.
Funny. Most I've laughed, like, lots of MCU stuff is funny, but there are some, like, really good, like, jokey jokes here that really landed for me.
And like, the banter between the two of them is great. Like, they just have great chemistry with each other. You're watching Tom Hiddleston and Owen Wilson, like, bounce off each other. And this is why a season two can often have, like, a higher potential than a season one, which is, like, we already know these characters. We already know their relationship. We already know their personalities. And now you get to just set them loose on each other. And the results are wonderful. So love seeing the two of them back in the mix together. Deep within the TVA, Mobius brings Loki to Ouroboros, or Obi, played by Ki-Hui Kwan, who runs a department that resembles a mailroom. While talking to Obi, Loki moves back through time, which Obi calls time slipping. In the past, Loki explains to a past version of Obi what's going on, which in turn provides Obi in the present with memories of his conversation with Loki. Loki convinces Obi to build a device that should solve the time slipping, which appears next to Obi in the presence. It's called a oral extractor, I believe, is the name of the device. And we talked about the sequence already, but it's amazing. It's so good. It works largely because of Ki-Hui Kwan's kind of befuddlement at what is going on. Like, he just does such a good job of playing that character. But, like, cutting back and forth and, like, giving this person, you know, information and facts hundreds of years in the past, and then them suddenly remembering in the future, everything comes together. The editing, the fact that the location looks significantly different in each time frame, the performance, like, it all comes together to make, like, a really incredible sequence. What did you think, Patrick Klepek?
I couldn't agree more. I was really kind of in astonishment, because in writing that paragraph, that sounds like nonsense. Like, the paragraph I wrote to summarize that sequence and I think it goes to show, like, when you... some of the difficulty with adapting works like this, like when you're pulling from comic books and different, like, these really comp things that sound like kind of fun on the page, but then reading something like these very complicated, convoluted ideas of time and just, like, the standard stuff that you see in comic books, it's one thing to see it, like, written down, think it in your head, see it illustrated. And then the moment it comes out of a person's mouth in front of a camera. We've talked about this with Ahsoka, like the stakes are just higher. You have to work harder to get the audience in on it. And there is so much of that here in Loki. Part of it is the show leaning into, like, isn't it funny how much gobbledygook is here? Like, the technobabble is, like, part of the fun. Like, it's not just a distraction to make it sound like it's confusing for confusing sake, to give a sense of grandiosity. Like, it is like, hey, like, it's kind of fun to say all these weird words and put them in a sentence together. But that sequence alone gave me a certain kind of confidence in the storytelling going forward. It's like, all right,
totally.
If you're going to be able, if you're going to take what is often like that sequence is so easy to imagine a different version of it where Obi is just, hello, welcome to the exposition factory.
Right.
Like I'm well, here.
Or literally what happened at the end of season one of Loki. Right.
Right. Yes. But, yes. And yeah, it still is an exposition factory, but done so in the tone of the show,
yes,
leaning into the strengths of all the actors. And like, it's just like one of the, I rewound it and watched it again. Just like, that is, it's a really incredible sequence. And in some ways, like, unfortunate that it's like, I hate to say stuck in a TV show, but it's just like, I, it's like stuck in this long sequence of movies and TVs. And like, it's one of my favorite things I'm probably going to see on screen this year. And it's like, you have to have so much investment and time in this particular like cinematic universe to like arrive at this point. But if you have, like the two of us have, it was just such a joy. It was like, oh man, I hope this, if this is the floor, like what is the ceiling on different sequences in the show going forward?
Absolutely. Absolutely brilliant. Brilliant sequence. Bravura sequence, amazing. This episode of television is probably the most aligned you and I have ever been on anything, Patrick. Which is wonderful. It's wonderful. That's
why
it's a good feeling. It's a good feeling.
Well, it's like Ahsoka, I'm on one side, you're there, and then we watch the Continental, and you're desperately trying to be on one side, and then eventually got to my side. And so, you know, we'll see where we end up by the end of Loki.
Yeah, I'm a little bit wary because I think Loki season one started very strongly as well.
Yeah, and for sure.
And I agree. I don't think it ended as strongly. And so but we'll see. Loki season two so far, really, really promising. Okay. So the group arrives at this place called the Temporal Loom, which is the heart of the TVA. Obi believes it's possible to retrofit the TVA to handle its new mission, but it requires closing the blast doors. Before he closes the blast doors, Mobius needs to walk into the rapidly breaking down temporal loom and use Obi's device to pull Loki out of the time stream, or Loki will be lost to time forever. Loki time slips again, and for a brief moment sees Sylvie. At the last second, he's able to escape the time stream and make it back inside the TVA with Mobius, saving both of them. Finally, B-15 watches as one of the members of the Judges' Council has finished raiding the TVA's armory, claiming to be on a mission to find Sylvie, but clearly preparing for war. Hey, Patrick, before we talk about all this stuff, when Loki makes it back into the TVA with Mobius, isn't it at a different time than what they were at before, if I recall correctly?
I believe so. I don't...
Yeah.
It was a little unclear to me where Loki is. Like,
it was
future...
not... Basically, Mobius ends up in a different place than where he started, if I recall correctly. And I think they did a good job with that, with like showing the... Like, it was so cool. Like, stuff that in the show you think is insignificant, like Mobius writing skin on the side of the thing, it then becomes a plot point in the show, which I just like is really well done, I thought.
Yeah.
So, but yes, Mobius arrives with Loki at like a different point in time by the end of the show, and it's unclear like what's going to happen with the two of them. And I think we'll find out. The question of what's going on there will be answered more significantly in the next episode.
Yeah, I agree. But I thought that sequence with the blast doors was also really great. I think, and again, it speaks to some of the strengths of the show, in which like this is the most like effects heavy portion. Where like there's just stuff happening on the screen and it looks cool.
Well, yeah, just the idea of the temporal loom itself and like fusing the strands of time to get, you know, like it's all these.
When he goes and like Owen Wilson goes, Mobius goes out there with like a physical, like again, like it does a really good job, I think, of like having physical real world things that then interact with the broader effects that are happening on screen and the characters that like you care about, like, to what degree like is going to vary, but I think the show is the show is centering those characters, right? Like, I think it's pulling a balancing act. But again, I find it very interesting to contrast this with our own reactions to Ahsoka, in which this is also another long-running series as part of a much broader tapestry in a franchise. And I think, like, Loki at its best, and I, you know, I agree with you, like, season one becoming worse as it goes along or losing a little bit of the plot on that. But I do think the show understands, like, why are you here? Like, and whether season two maintains that, I don't know. But, like, even in moments like that where lots of pretty colors are going along the screen, like, I'm invested in, like, Owen Wilson, like, getting down there. Like, I'm stressed when, like, Obi is pressing the button and the blast doors are closing. And, like, it's cool to have those stakes when, like, you know, you're usually getting to the point where, you know, all the effects are flying this way and that way.
Yeah, yeah. I will say one thing that does annoy me about the show is setting it up as though, like, if this doesn't happen, then Loki's going to be lost forever. And then it's like, okay, guys, I don't think Loki's going to be lost forever. Okay?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's annoying. And by the way, they pulled a similar thing in season one, too, where they don't explain to you what pruning does, right? It's very clever. They're like, we prune, and it looks like it vaporizes the person. But then it turns out it just sends you to a different place where all the people who have pruned end up. And
this is a clever answer. Like, that's a really good, like, I thought that was one of the better reveals of season
sure.
one.
But I guess, like, it's just like this idea of, like, there being multiple fake outs for Loki dying. Like, yeah. that annoys me. And so, like,
I agree.
Is he really lost to time forever? I don't, let's not, you know, cool it, Kiwi Kwan. Okay. Like,
well, that,
who,
actually, that's who, why
do,
I
who
thought...
do you think, who do you think you're fooling here when you say that is a question, right? So, yeah.
That's why I thought one of the last, like, kind of repeated jokes in the episode about how painful it could be for Mobius and how painful it could be for Loki was a better way of adding tension to the scene was the repeated jokes of the monstrous physical pain the two of them were going to go through as a result of the process.
Yeah.
Was like a more effective way of creating tension than saying, well, he might die. It's like, no, the show's called Loki. Like, yeah, he's not going to die.
Just, come on, guys. All right, please. And in episode one, two, I mean, that's like an episode five move. Okay. Come on, guys. All right. So I also want to give a shout out to Kate Dickey, very talented character actress who's appeared in shows like Game of Thrones, and she was in The Witch, and she's in this season, and she's kind of overseeing the TVA gearing up for whatever battle's coming next. So we'll see how that plays out. In a post-credit scene, Sylvie shows up in a branched timeline in Broxton, Oklahoma in 1982 and visits a McDonald's. After hearing what's on the menu, Sylvie says ominously, "I want to try everything." So that's what happens in the post-credit scenes. I have a feeling we'll find out more about what's going on there in the next episode. Patrick Klepek, any other thoughts on this episode of Loki Season 2? Overall, really solid episode. Great, strong beginning. Looking forward to what's coming next.
Yeah, on the same page. Like, I like that I kind of don't know where it's going. We'll see if it manages to stick the landing on creating an interesting path there. I am curious whether the show, it's only six episodes, right? They tend to go a little longer on the, you know, the 40-minute side. But I'm interested in the two tracks. Like, I'm interested in the evolution of Loki and Sylvie's relationship. The show seems to be interested in what does it mean for less about like the TVA and its mission being false, but what does it mean to discover like you're a variant, like you had a life, like there are things you missed out on. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to mine there that could be really interesting. And sure, these are not, I don't expect to see Mobius and B-15 and like those characters outside of this little corner of the universe and Loki, but I'd love it if the show spent time emotionally with those characters and like, cause that's a really, I think, interesting place for the show to do some character work, to like give some gravity to whatever spectacle, like the war, like clearly war with Kang is coming. Like, I get it. Like, I know that's kind of where we're headed. And it's like along the way, like, yeah, this is a bureaucracy. But like, I think we can all see ourselves in like being stuck in a place doing a thing. And if, the idea of like that changing your whole view of like how you viewed yourself and your workplace. I hope they find some humanity in the bureaucracy as opposed to just like, it's funny that the TVA is like weird and strange. And I think that might be something that could be interesting for the show to touch on, but that's going to be a lot with like Loki, Kang, and Sylvie, right, to carry all through only six episodes.
I really hope that the show focuses more on the emotional stakes and less on, aha, a new twist. Oh, did you see this coming? You know, like every episode. I hope it tries to rein that back a little bit and focus on the emotional stakes this season. But even just seeing Ki-Hui Kwan act in things again, what a world where we can see Ki-Hui Kwan acting in things, man. Not a world we thought we would ever experience 3 years ago, but now it's a reality. And that is a timeline I can get behind. So let us know what you think of Loki season 2 at decodingtv@gmail.com. We're going to be covering this every week. We'd love to hear your theories, your thoughts. So hit us up again, decodingtv@gmail.com. Find more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com and find us on TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at decodingtv. He is Patrick Klepek. Check out his work at crossplay.news, where he writes a very cool Substack newsletter, as well as Remap Radio, wherever podcasts can be downloaded. I am David Chen. We'll see you next week for another episode of Loki Season 2. Goodbye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.